It's the Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Senate Republican Caucus. I'm Tracy Ellis. A new state Senate report sounds the alarm about an effort to empty prisons and return felons to the street. Three Republican senators held a news conference on prison alarm bells, 5 years of failure at the Department of Corrections, and what Washington could do about it, from Senators Mike Padden, Keith Wegener, and Chris Gildon. We'll start with 4th District Senator Mike Padden of Spokane Valley. Senator Padden.
Many of you are aware of the problems created by law enforcement with new legislation during the last legislative session, restricting police tactics and the use of non-lethal weapons. But this is just part of a bigger picture. The current direction of the Department of Corrections, combined with recent efforts by the executive and legislative branches, are helping to create a perfect storm in the public safety sector. As part of the strategy to reduce incarceration, the governor's office and our colleagues have been working to reduce sentences and create programs to give inmates early release. The challenges for the present administration appear to be whether prison cells can be emptied fast enough. The problem is that when convicted felons are returned to the streets, about a third of them can be expected to commit new crimes within 3 years of release. The state's current recidivism rate is just under 31%. And of course, we don't know how many crimes are committed that are never accounted for. These efforts to put lawbreakers back on the streets sooner put additional pressures on law enforcement agencies that have been already hamstrung by new policing restrictions. And we can expect to see it reflected in the rising crime rate. In fact, that's already started. And that puts the people of Washington State at risk. Today, we are releasing a report on the crisis these new policies have created. It happens to be a 5-year follow-up to the report issued by the Senate Law and Justice Committee in May of 2016 about systemic management problems at the Department of Corrections. Some of them included early release incidents in the Division of Community Corrections, negligence in inmate medical care that resulted in multiple deaths at the Monroe Correction Center, a negligent inmate housing process that resulted in a brutal beating death at the Airway Heights Correctional Center. Another set of problems have been created at the highest level of management, the legislature and the governor's office. These problems are quite disturbing. Over the last 5 years, our colleagues have pursued an agenda that appears to regard Department of Corrections more as a human service agency devoted to the well-being of inmates and one that has failed to put public safety first. This agenda has been reflected in efforts to release prisoners en masse and to reduce the length of sentences imposed by judicial officers. In the last 4 years, 19 separate bills have been introduced that weaken criminal sentencing. Perhaps the most notorious is this year's legislation to eliminate felony sentences for possession of heroin, methamphetamines, cocaine, and other hard drugs. Today, it is a barely enforceable misdemeanor, which has a maximum sentence of 90 days in jail and a $1,000 fine. And many prosecutors don't pursue them at all. At the direction of the governor's office and our colleagues in the legislature, DOC has made early release of convicted felons a priority. About 500 inmates were released early through the start of 2020, and the legislature voted this year to make another 3,000 inmates eligible for early release. In addition, the governor chose to release 1,000 inmates en masse last year at the peak of the COVID crisis, even though we had ample facilities to segregate stricken inmates and keep them in custody. Let me underscore this point. 5 years ago, everybody agreed that the accidental release of prisoners was a terrible thing and considered one of the worst scandals in our state's history. Now, early releases are a matter of official state policy. And to me, it gets worse. As a result of these efforts, the prison system is currently at 77% of capacity. So the Department of Corrections is preparing a plan to eliminate 3,300 prison beds from the system. This plan will ensure that pressure for early release and sentence reductions will continue into the future, and that the state will have to keep emptying cells to prevent overcrowding. In the last 5 years, the state population has increased by nearly 600,000 people. The crime rate is on the rise as well. In the last 5 years, we have seen double-digit increases in the crime rate for every category of violent crime. In our original report, we dealt with one of the biggest management failures in state history, the inadvertent early release of some 3,000 inmates convicted of violent and dangerous crimes. What made the case especially troubling and awful was the fact that DOC learned its computers were calculating sentences improperly, yet it took no action to fix the problem for another 3 years after they knew, because it had other priorities. Many of these inmates who were released early committed new crimes when they should have been behind bars. These crimes included vehicular homicide and murder. And let us not forget the victims, Cesar Medina here in Spokane and Lindsay Hill in Bellevue. After an exhaustive investigation, the Senate Law and Justice Committee identified a number of management problems within DOC, and we recommended a series of reform. Only a few of them were enacted, and some partially due to opposition from the governor's office. Our most important finding was that the Department of Correction had failed to put public safety first. State law says the protection of public safety is one of several duties for the Department of Corrections. We recommended a clear statement be placed in state law declaring that public safety is the paramount duty of the Department of Corrections. This was never done, and the failure to make public safety the central duty of the Department of Corrections is the reason for many of the management failures we have seen over the last 5 years. It is important to recognize that state law defines the protection of public safety as the protection of the public as a whole, as well as the protection of inmates under the care of the Department of Corrections and Department of Corrections staff. In our new report, Prison Alarm Bells, 5 years of failure at the Department of Corrections and what Washington can do about it, we discuss the problems that have surfaced since the early releases were revealed. DOC has made some progress since 2016. Reporting processes have improved, and the new Ombuds Office has done good work in responding to the concerns of inmates and families. It is unfortunate that the Ombuds Office was not set up to serve DOC employees as well as we recommended in 2016. We know that frontline employees are very concerned about management practices and policies because they contact us regularly. Employees still do not have an effective conduit to communicate their concerns about upper management without fear of retaliation. Despite these improvements, there have been some serious internal management problems over the last 5 years that indicate public safety is still not the central concern it should be. We know that prison populations have fallen from about 18,000 to less than 14,000, partly due to this effort to open the prison doors and partly because of COVID-related shutdowns or slowdowns in prosecutions. We currently rank 38th in the nation for incarceration per capita. So we're not one of the states that, you know, lock them up, throw away the key, let them stay and rot forever. We are not that type of state. There may be some who believe our goal should be to send fewer people to prison for a shorter time, but the legislature has never considered that issue as a whole. I think the public would have a different view if the question was put to them in a straightforward way. These practices and policies put our public safety at risk. With this report, we make a series of recommendations about changes to DOC management practices, but the most important recommendation is an issue for the legislature and the governor's office. And the Department of Corrections needs to put public safety first. It should be our top priority for our criminal justice system. And it is true today as it was in 2016. With that, I'll turn the remarks over to Senator Gildon.
I think Senator Patton did a really good job of explaining the problem and the history behind it. And while this specific report is about the Department of Corrections, it is important to note that that is just one link in our system of justice. It all really begins with law enforcement enforcing the law and making arrests. And then it includes prosecutors who bring cases to trial. And then pretty much it finishes with the Department of Corrections. And so as Senator Patton said, you know, we as a state have real issues at each one of those links. Specifically, some of the laws that he mentioned, the police tactics bill and the use of force bill, contribute to difficulties enforcing the law. And then we have other bills that just passed recently, such as the Blake decision, and then Senate Bill 5164, which either remove or reduce the penalties for crime. But we also see a real lack of enthusiasm in prosecuting crime by many of our prosecutors. And this is really evident in King County, where in 2019, that office dismissed 41% of all felony referrals. They didn't take action on 41% of all felony referrals from law enforcement. And when you compare that to Spokane County, where only 6% were dismissed, I think one of the root causes of increased crime grows clearer. But finally, coming to the topic of today and the final link in this chain, and what we see is we have an agency that's just out of balance. We know that the Department of Corrections' main mission is to ensure public safety. But we also recognize a very strong supporting effort is the rehabilitation of those in its care. And it's incredibly important that we do everything possible to ensure a person has the knowledge, the skills, and the abilities necessary to succeed upon their release. Unfortunately, we have been releasing persons before they've had sufficient time to gain those knowledge, skills, and abilities. And we see this very clearly with the most recent early releases from the governor last year. Of the 1,016 persons released early, almost 64% of them have already failed after just 1 year. And this includes a 33-year-old man named Corey. He was released early while serving a sentence for unlawful possession of a firearm. He had 7 prior felony convictions and 2 misdemeanors. He cut off his ankle monitor within 10 days of release, and he was arrested while high on meth and after attacking a 60-year-old woman in Everett. This is just one example. There are certainly numerous others, but it clearly highlights how releasing people before both their sentence and their program of rehabilitation is complete puts the public at risk and actually sets that individual up for failure. Right now, crime's at all-time highs, while jail cell occupancy is at really historic lows. Our system has limited the ability of law enforcement to enforce the laws. Many of our prosecutors are simply not prosecuting crime. And our Department of Corrections has gotten its priorities just out of balance, and they're in need of realignment. Bottom line is the citizens of Washington State deserve to be safe in their homes, their possessions, and their persons. And likewise, the state has a responsibility to do everything possible to ensure a successful reentry of those under its care. And I think with that, I'll go ahead and close for Senator Wagner to give some comments.
Well, thank you. I represent the 39th Legislative District, which includes the beautiful city of Monroe and the Monroe Correctional Complex. So these issues in the report are very close to home for me. This report chronicles a series of failures most of you, and I'm speaking to the media, are very familiar with because you covered those stories at the time. And what it does is it takes those events and connects the dots to bring us to where we are today with respect to law and justice and public safety. And where are we? Well, you all know, over the past 5 years, double-digit increases in crimes across the board, I think with one exception, which is burglary. That's a minimum of double-digit increases. human trafficking is up 270%. The numbers are all in the report. Our prisons are empty, they're underfunded, they're under-resourced, and this is all being done under some very unreasonable pretenses, in my opinion. And it's important to know how we got here so we can choose better, more effective solutions going forward, instead of just doubling down on failed policies, which seems to be the chosen path of the majority party. But the real meat of this document are in the solutions. It's easy for us to point out the failures. That's easy. We've looked at what hasn't worked and what could work better, and we've developed 15 concrete, straightforward improvements that could be implemented by the governor, by the Department of Corrections, or through legislative action in relatively short order that would ensure better outcomes for victims, better outcomes for offenders and their families, better outcomes for our dedicated professionals in the Department of Corrections. They're not mutually exclusive ideas. I don't think any one of those groups wouldn't be better served by working, living in a safer, secure, and healthy environment. And that includes our communities too, because that's our charge. That's really our task. And it hasn't been lived up to. So 15 concrete solutions, which we could talk about in depth, but I want to respect your time. So I'll limit myself to a couple of concepts that are important to me. And the first is the health and well-being of the people who work and are incarcerated in our prisons. We've seen egregious errors that resulted either directly or indirectly in deaths. And, you know, how do you explain that to families and loved ones? I don't know. I'm tempted to say there isn't a dollar value on that, but in fact, there is. And those liabilities claims, those so-called tort payouts, are in the millions. And that's on top of approximately $10 million already paid out over the erroneous releases. So my question is, do the people of Washington want to continue to lose people and pay out millions in liability for foreseeable and avoidable errors? I don't think so. I sponsored Senate Bill 6063 in the 2020 legislative session, requiring DOC to do an agency-wide standard of medical best practices and to, if you can imagine, only hire qualified people. That wasn't happening. But just last week, I was on a meeting between FODI, the families of the incarcerated, and the Department of Corrections, and listened to their concern for their loved ones, not getting timely medical attention, not feeling sufficiently protected from known COVID-infected individuals, not receiving adequate behavioral health treatment and counseling. I'm not in the facilities. I have to listen to what the families are saying, and they're saying we aren't there yet. And this is addressed by several of our recommendations. So one of the ones that I think is absolutely vital is we need to immediately implement electronic health records. Why can't we get that done? Something that nearly every hospital utilizes to ensure swift and accurate care. We need to do it now. Secondly, we need to put a pause on reducing our correctional facility capacity. DOC is touting a 3,300 bed reduction based on current occupancy and citing an $80 million shortfall in funding. Imagine that, the largest operating budget in history, and we shorted corrections $80 million. This is a manufactured situation, totally manufactured by the administration and the legislature through bad policy, and it's exacerbated by continuing to follow flawed logic that goes like this. And this is heavy sarcasm, so you'll have to listen carefully and not quote me. Facilities are expensive, so let's reduce the number of facilities or consolidate them or whatever your euphemism is. And then we get to what? Overcrowding. So the next illogical step is we need to let people out sooner, as we saw all this year, and quit putting people in by decriminalizing what is truly criminal behavior. Now you have, at least temporarily, underutilization. And what's the solution for that? Well, first we'll reduce funding. We've just seen that. Next, we'll close down or consolidate. And when the people you've let out early recidivate, which they will at a rate of about 30% or higher, as you heard from Senator Gildon in recent accounts, what do you get there? Overcrowding, unsafe conditions, harder to protect from infectious diseases. We're still understaffed. You can't have that. So now what? Let more people out before they have a chance to answer for their crimes, before they have a chance to get training and become rehabilitated, before they have a chance to enter drug and alcohol programs. And all of this benefits public safety. How? It doesn't. We need to change. And I think this report is a path to at least part of that change. And I'm asking you who are listening today and in the media to help us get the word out. Help us make public safety our number one priority and make our Department of Corrections facilities work again.
Find us online at src.wastateledge.org. Follow us on YouTube and Twitter at WashingtonSRC and on Facebook at Washington Republican Senate Caucus. I'm Tracy Ellis. This is The Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Senate Republican Caucus.